Hello and welcome to the TCR number 8 daily podcast, coming to you live from Control Point 2 in the town of Santa Caterina in the Italian Alps. There's no taxidermy here like at the last hotel. There are Christmas decorations up at the control point, and there are hotel guests walking through in bathrobes to get to the health spa, which is quite interesting. Really exciting for this episode. I've brought along a special guest, control point manager and washed up ex-pro turned into ultra cycling pundit, Chris Thomas. Welcome to the pod, Chris.
Mate, thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here. I'm not sure about that intro.
that's all lies. He's very much active, very, very strong rider. As always, joining us in the, well, it's a virtual bar for you guys, it's kind of a real bar for us. We've got Karen and Rob.
Hello. That's where you get it.
We've got really efficient with this now.
Yeah.
We just want to hear what Chris has to say. Let's go on. Let's get on with it.
Yeah, Chris has really got his finger on the pulse here. So, like, as usual, it's just frightening how fast these guys are going and how much the general sort of shape of the race is changing. So between the start and CP1, we had this split, didn't we, around the mountains, and now coming down from CP1, CP2, it's a completely different shape. Everyone's strung out in a big long line, and I can just announce as I'm going through this that a rider's arriving at CP2 live. So
Mr. Mixel,
we'll try and get him on the pod.
Awesome.
David Mixel,
super duper 111.
So yeah, probably have to do some work.
Signing in for us.
Just a bit of admin.
Yeah.
Chris is doing that, you guys have been kind of watching what's happening in the race. What do you make of the, you know, generally what's been going on today?
Yeah, I mean, as you're saying, it's been really interesting seeing the change in the shape of the race between Czech Control Point 1 and the Czech Republic, kind of going through Germany and Austria through to Control Point 2, where you guys are now at Passo di Gavia in Italy. We can hear the clapping in the background. The race is now really strung out. Everyone seems to be following more or less the same roads the whole stretch. So I guess that's probably meant that there's been quite a lot of interesting kind of vying between people on the roads and kind of leapfrogging going on, and people kind of finding their relevant competitor. You can see that it's split up into a few different groups of people that are kind of all riding in close proximity, and every time you look there's slightly different positions between them. So it feels like it's starting to get going and feel like a bit of a tasty race now.
And like, Rob, what's going on at CP1? We don't want to forget about that, because obviously some riders are still going through there.
Yeah, so CP1 closed at, was it 1 o'clock today?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, 1 p.m.
For those unfamiliar, every control point in the race has an opening time, which generally is when the first rider arrives, and then they have a closing time and date. And if you don't meet the cutoff, you won't be able to qualify for the general classification. So today, CP1 closed. And unfortunately, as is always the case, there's, I think, roughly 20 riders that would have missed that cutoff. But at the same time, there's been some great stories of people overcoming adversity and rushing through the gates just before it closes. It must be tough not to be able to make it. I mean, in my own edition of the race, I was sat with the same problem where it was super late at night, and it must have been the third checkpoint. It closed at midnight, and I was a big mountain pass away, and I only had 2 hours. But in the end, I just went, what am I doing? I might as well just go for it. So I went for it, and I managed just to scrape in by, I think, seconds, minutes, if not seconds. Oh, but
nice.
I mean, I was lucky. I mean, not everyone. I mean, a few of us made that jump. And yeah, there's actually a photo from the race, and you can see the gormless smile on my face. That I'm just so happy. I'm like, ooh, like. But yeah, interesting.
Have you guys ever had close calls, Chris and Karen, with checkpoints?
I've been lucky.
That doesn't surprise me.
No, I've usually been there with enough time to spare, just about. Yeah.
How about you, Karen? Probably the same.
I've never quite been in the zone of worrying that I wouldn't get to a control point, but it does just take one thing to mess things up for you. So yeah, been lucky so far.
Yeah, missed one.
I'm the only middle of the pack rider here, or back of the pack.
I'm with you, Rob. I've missed a control point. I've also seen. I've done the thing where I've like ridden through the night on a mad mission to try and make it, and then scraped in, and then like slept for 24 hours, and then missed the next one.
There's actually I saw someone post and I can't remember which rider it is, but someone made a comment on Instagram like something along the lines of, you know, fourth time maybe you make the finishers party. So I don't know who that is. It's like, but I like the tenacity of keep trying. And like,
yeah
well, I don't know if it's still the case, but you know, it's a big deal to be the last one into the finish line before the close of the finish line, isn't it? It's kind of a badge of honour. That's almost, after winning, it's probably the most desired position.
Exactly. Very coveted. Well,
it's certainly, you get a bigger cheer when you arrive than the first person.
Exactly.
Does. Yeah. You've got a whole group of people waiting to say well done to you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right, so we were here in the early hours at CP2 to see the first three riders come through, and it was pretty exciting, wasn't it, Chris?
It, despite that, the early hours, it was actually really exciting to see whether the guys were going to relentlessly keep pushing. We've basically got a front group of about three guys who are on what seems like another planet in terms of their endurance. I mean, Ulrich, Adam and Robin are riding so hard and going so deep. I mean, you can see that on their faces when they arrived, especially Ulrich and Adam, who pushed on so hard up to this checkpoint. They didn't even realize that Robin had stopped in Bormio. And when Ulrich gave us his brevet card and said, I can't believe how fast Robin is, and I had to say, well, you're first. His face, the surprise on his face was an absolute picture. It was perfect. Then it's the decision of whether pushing so hard and going so deep and getting here was maybe detrimental, because Robin's rest then gave him a big boost and he was away as soon as he came past.
Yeah, so Ulrich and Adam stayed at the control point last night, didn't they?
Yeah.
And then I think they even had breakfast here from what I...
I think so, maybe at around 7, something like that.
And and the thing that Robin did was that he slept in a town... sort of a few K down the road, didn't he, before the control point, got in his rest. And then once he'd done that, he kind of ripped through the control point. I didn't see it.
He came in, he looked extremely fresh. He was almost running in here, gave us the brevet card, got stamped, went out. And then we looked at his average speed of climbing up the Gavia, and it was electric speed in comparison to everybody else. And I think that he made a really, really smart decision to stop in Bormio, rest, take a few hours, and then ride the Gavia in the early hours so that he wouldn't overheat. There was no rain, the conditions were pretty calm, and he managed to summit and get down the other side before the other guys had even got up. So it was pretty smart tactic, I think.
I mean, just psychologically, it's a big blow for the guys that are having their breakfast watching this guy power off.
Yeah exactly.
I'm quite excited to see the race now moving east into the Balkans, and to bring us to Puzani and Dermator with the third control point. This one, I think, is where we're really going to see some shake-up in the general classification, because from the I did this checkpoint when I did the race, and you have some pretty tough routing decisions in how to approach it. So I think once they start to get there, they will start to see some shakeups, and I think there will be some very clear differences in where people decide to go.
Yeah, and then I guess there's also just the sheer amount of time for stuff to go wrong with people, isn't there? It's going to start creating more gaps and differences between people's riding. On that note, we kind of we also saw Christoph Strasser coming in to the control point, and he's been sort of tucked away, like not right at the front. He's kind of gone a little bit under the radar, hasn't he?
He has. He's been very sort of subtle, hasn't really necessarily shone in front of anybody else so far, except for when he left here. Because he left here like a man on a mission. I think he came in seventh place, and by the time he'd climbed up the Gabbia, descended down the other side, and got down towards the Italian valley, he was in fourth place. So he's screaming along at a really fast pace. He's going to be one to watch definitely for the rest of this race.
I have to say, I've been really enjoying... he's relatively active on social media compared to the other guys at the front, from what I've seen. And he just always seems to be having a really nice time. Oh, I don't know if it's just his personality, but he always looks very chipper. And yeah, it's really nice to see. But he's also blisteringly fast.
He wasn't nice and chipper when he was ordering his food from the hotel bar and getting really frustrated that they were doing it extremely slowly.
Oh, interesting.
Definitely brought out the Hulk.
The personality of the elite level ultra cyclist, that things have got to be fast. Why is it not fast? I need to go. Let's go.
Yeah, well, yeah, he literally said that.
Did he really?
So
we've just had another rider arrive.
Yeah.
Sebastian.
Who is it?
Sebastian. Yeah. Two here with us at the moment.
Sebastian, welcome to CP2.
Thanks.
How are you feeling?
Bad.
Bad. that's the word from Sebastian. He's feeling
Did you
bad.
Come over? Oh man, well, good job for getting here, well done.
Yeah, but no, I have to look.
We can probably crack on with this then. Should we just do the quick roundup of the women's races?
Yeah. So Fiona, when we last spoke, Fiona was without a tracker because she'd had it stolen, or at least got lost while she was having her purse stolen, but she's now got a tracker back on, and we can see she's back in first place amongst the women, and she was the first woman through control point two. I think she came through a couple of hours ago, if that's right. Then not too far behind, we've got the same top three, so Megan Häkkinen followed by Anne-Marie Kühne. And they're not all that far off the parkour up to control point two now. Probably will be coming through there at some point tonight. Yeah.
Yeah, we tried to.
Or maybe they do what Robin did and have a sleep before the climb.
Yeah, I think if they just kept going, I think it would be early hours, like sort of 2 a.m. or something. And I don't know what their sleep pattern has been, so it might well be that they have a sleep beforehand.
Yeah, I think so as well. If the conditions are how Stefan just described, it doesn't sound too nice up there.
What was he saying?
He's saying it's super windy, it's pretty cold, and then it's raining as well by the Haisham Pass. Mm-hmm. So there's all kinds of weather. It's sometimes thunderstorms, sometimes raining, super windy. Then it's really, really hot. It's typical summer in the mountains, giving you everything every day.
Yeah, I've seen some pictures of Wahoos reading kind of 1 degree. I guess that must be somewhere in the Alps.
Yeah, exactly.
But then on the next image along is people complaining of the blistering heat. So yeah, bit of everything.
Yeah, exactly. Well, everyone is coming in here with incredible suntan or sunburn, but whilst wearing down jackets. So that explains everything pretty much.
Has anyone been kind of caught out by the weather so far? Are there people that are a bit underprepared? Because I've seen, for example, I saw a picture of Robin's bike and setup today. It's incredibly minimal. He doesn't even really have a saddlebag, I don't think. So, you know, have they got everything they need?
I mean, some of them are really traveling super lightweight. I mean, they're maybe with just a sleeping bag, or they're with just a down jacket, no sleeping bag. And they're sleeping in only hotels. Ulrich, when he came in the early hours, said he was wearing a base layer, a shirt, a windbreaker, a down jacket and a rain jacket. And he was still cold because he descended off the Umbral at 3 o'clock in the morning. And he had his long gloves, his leg warmers, and he was still cold. So I don't even know whether you can actually pack enough to keep you warm enough for these rides sometimes. So I think that some of them are super minimal, but they're getting through it. A lot of them have packed a lot and they're still suffering. So it's hard to say, really.
Have you guys ever got caught out without enough clothing?
My issue has been more on the ultras that I've done has been caught out with too much clothing or too much heat. I've luckily not had all that much bad cold or wet weather, but that's kind of pretty fluky, I think.
Yeah, on TCR number 4, it rained really bad in the Alps. So, all my waterproofs weren't waterproof, really. So I ended up pretty wet. And I had to book into a hotel during the day just because, like, I was just shaking so much. You know when your teeth chatter, but they're, like, literally cracking, like, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. So, there's just me and her dry in the hotel and, like, getting in the bed fully dressed so that the bedding would absorb the water out of my clothes. That was before going to this checkpoint that was going to cut off. Because my thought was stay in bed and get warm, but then I just went for it, and that was crazy because there's still snow on top of the, I think there's a San Pellegrino pass, it's very difficult to prepare for everything. I mean, now I think there's obvious items of clothing that I swear by and you would definitely have and not do without.
I'm seeing the title of your new book, Me, Myself and a Hairdryer.
Yeah.
I've got the video. It's extremely funny.
Very useful bit of kit that for the ultra cyclists.
Sure.
We've yet to have a pair through.
Yeah.
Have you guys been keeping up to speed with what's happening with the pairs? I'm guessing it's still the France.
Yeah, we're not expecting any pairs through until at least tomorrow, at the absolute earliest. They're still not into Austria yet.
So the Gates family are just approaching the border.
Yeah.
And don't know about the French guys.
I think they were suffering quite a lot.
Were they?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, dear.
They are ahead, though. I think.
Are they
the French pair are still ahead.
Okay.
Stefan and Theo, which probably
they're in Austria.
Mm. Give them their actual names.
Yeah.
They're in Austria.
The French pair.
Yeah,
they're maybe halfway through the kind of crossing, the traverse of Austria.
Oh, okay.
Do we know why they've been having problems?
I think they were struggling a lot with the heat in the first couple of days. I think that Stefan and Theo were really struggling to get the food in. Famously, it's always said that this is an eating competition first and then a cycling competition second. And if you can't get the fuel in, you literally cannot keep going. You just don't have the energy. And I think that, the first couple of days, heat does that to you really badly sometimes. You just don't want to eat. And I think they've been really suffering with that.
Yeah, heat stroke and just makes you nauseous, doesn't it? So exactly. Yeah, that's the hardest thing, trying to ride your bike on an empty stomach is no fun.
Exactly. Yeah, it's really tough.
We've had starting to get some more scratches coming through now, some more people pulling out. The highest profile one is Bjørn Leonard, scratched. I'm not sure when he drops out.
I think he dropped out earlier today.
Yeah.
With Achilles injuries. I think, again, just relentless mountains and heat, cold, and going really, really hard. His Achilles have just started playing havoc with him. This is what I've read from the information anyway.
Yeah. And then the other big one is Ben Davies, which was maybe not so much of a surprise because he's just doing this off the back of his Trans Am win, which was about 4 weeks ago or something.
I think he said to Anna at the start, didn't he, that this was a bit of a test. Yeah. It was going to be a test to see whether it's possible. And I think we've got our answer from this.
Yeah. He was saying it was either going to be, like in the form of his life, having had that much sort of, you know, training in his legs, or he was just going to not really be able to get up a hill.
And he is an incredibly strong racer, unbelievably strong. I mean, coming second in the 2009 edition, doing incredibly well in the Trans Am. I mean, he's no sort of mug in terms of ultra cycling, but obviously with not a lot of recovery in between a huge race before, you're going to really suffer. I think it was too much too soon.
Yeah, he had a lovely attitude though coming into it because of that he had no pressure, and I imagine he probably enjoyed himself before he scratched. And then apart from those two guys, we've got Matthias Blokhalet. Oh, I'm going to butcher all of these pronunciations.
Go on, go for it.
Stan Meunier, Lars Gotzenberger, Mikhail Turner.
Thurner.
Katarina Siegel. There's a rider just leaving. Katarina Siegel, Gilles Rodier, Tom Claes, and Michael Schlotter. Oh, and the pair, Rudolf Ranto. Oh, no. Do you remember the one pair that scratched last time? Well, his riding buddy is now gone as well.
Maybe they scratched at the same time, just didn't get the order in.
Have we got any more stories from the control?
From the control, we're not so many. We've only had 17 riders that have come through so far out of 250 something. So we're still waiting. The field is really strung out. When you zoom out of the tracking map on Follow My Challenge, you can just see this caterpillar of dots spreading from checkpoint one to checkpoint two, and they're all relatively evenly spaced apart from the front group of three, then the next group of four, and then you kind of have the rest strung out with relatively even gaps. It will be really interesting to see who pushes on tonight, who sleeps, who rests, and then the next 24 hours I think will be really telling in the rest of the race.
Karen, you've been combing through the social media from the riders, looking for some interesting stories or themes. What have you found?
Yeah, so I guess we haven't touched on it so far. There's been a bit of stuff about the forest fires that were near control point one, which I don't think affected any of the routes, but there's been quite a lot of people talking about feeling the smoke in the air, kind of almost feeling it burn their lungs a bit, which I guess is not what you want when you're slogging it on a bike for however many hours in a day. I don't know if we've heard anything from people at, you know, Chris, your colleagues running control point one, if that's kind of affected how they've been doing things up there, or if it's been always kind of at enough of a distance that it wasn't quite ever a worry for the race.
I haven't really heard anything from them, to be honest with you. I think they're a bit of their own entity up there. I think we all kind of feel like we're a bit of our own entity in each of the checkpoints. So I haven't really got any information from checkpoint one, only the stuff I've seen on social media.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was down there, and first night we were there, I remember waking up in the middle of the night, and the first thing I noticed was the smell of smoke coming into the room. And then Anna had to go and drive the whole parkour to try and work out whether it was safe for riders to actually ride and whether there were, you know, wildfires ripping across the parkour. And it was basically okay. I think the wind was blowing the fire away from the parkour, but it's pretty scary. It's pretty scary stuff.
Yeah, I guess it's been a really hot and dry summer everywhere, so as is increasingly how things are going.
Yeah.
But yeah, moving on, I don't know, we spoke a little bit about saddle sore yesterday, yeah. But I've seen some more of those posts coming through now. I think Amre at Control Point One, there's a quote from her somewhere saying, you know, the race is perfect so far, except for I've got saddle sore. And I've seen someone else who's posted, I think it's cap number 8, who says they called it a day 50 kilometres early, too painful to sit down. And after another 3,000 metres of climbing and 250 kilometres ridden, I'm officially ahead of schedule, so decided to spend an hour treating my sores. Well worth it in the long run. And the food smelled amazing. So can see that kind of stuff starting to creep in now. Certainly in my experience, if your luxury item is a second pair of bibs, I think that can massively help reduce saddle sore in some cases. If you're keeping nice and clean, it can kind of soften the blows a little bit. So I think that's increasingly going to be a theme I think we'll see coming through on social media and also just the riders coming through the control point.
The purchases of Sudocream through Europe are going to go through the roof.
Yeah. The annual run on stocks.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to be running low soon. I know that quite a few riders have been coming in here complaining about the same thing. And I know like Andrew came in and said it was a toss-up between standing up and riding and hurting his legs and hurting his wrists, or sitting down and hurting his sit bones and having saddle sores. So there's a few guys that are dealing with that at the moment, up at the sharp end of the race as well, for sure.
And I guess the combination of being really hot and then being really wet and all of this kind of stuff is just going to be adding to it.
Yeah, it definitely makes it exponentially worse. And I think you're going to, exactly like this post, you're going to see a lot more people talking about Sudocream, chamois cream, plasters, Compeed.
Rob, any experience or advice on this?
Saddle sores. I've suffered from them, and actually the best thing I ever got advised by a pharmacist was Canesten, which now goes with me, which Sudocream doesn't do nothing, but this pharmacist was like, get the Canesten. I was like, no, you've got this all wrong, you're not understanding me. Suffered for a bit more and then bought some Canesten, and then it like disappeared within like days. And
what about saddle sores?
Yeah. Ooh. Good one. Yeah. No, it sounds unusual, and I don't know why, but that was literally the first time I got into cycling, and I bought my first pair of shorts, and then the whole thing of like not wearing underpants. I was like, not wearing underpants. So I went for a massive ride wearing underpants with it, and I paid. I literally had saddle sores for like 2 months, 3 months, and then I couldn't get rid of it. And then the Canesten was what nailed it. So this pharmacist down in Surrey that literally saved my ass.
Nice.
That's good. I've been a bit quiet in this episode. Yeah.
Podcast sponsor.
Get them on a control point next year.
Yeah.
They can hand it out as riders go past, like throwing out fistfuls of it. Like
that is a very good idea.
a bathtub of it to get just sit in.
Soaking in Caliston.
Yeah.
Right, so now we're just going to get on to the listener question section. And I'm afraid, Rob, you've received a listener booking here from Dan Brace.
No, I wouldn't say it's explicitly a booking, would you?
And so what he says is, I wanted to raise a discussion point regarding something Rob said in the last pod. When given a choice, he took a time penalty for knowingly benefiting from a prohibited road rather than taking the road less travelled, but that was permitted. I appreciate that to some extent this was within the boundaries of the rules, in so much that he suffered a time penalty for his misdemeanour. However, save the leaders, the penalties are only applied in the aftermath when all of the fanfare has died down and no one is paying attention anymore. Nobody who didn't race goes back to see the shuffled order of things a month later. Given this context, I would like the panel to discuss whether they think Rob's actions fell within the spirit of the race, Rob. So how are you going to defend yourself against that?
You loaded that question quite well. Defending myself, yeah. I mean, whether it is something that I need to be defending, but you know, there's a few aspects to this, and of course it's like dealing with the race ethics or potentially even the morality of the riders. You know, is this action against the spirit of the race? The Transcontinental does literally on their website have, you know, a definition of the spirit of the race, and it's to uphold or have the integrity to uphold the values of equality and fair play. So I would say maybe in that definition, I mean, even that's open to interpretation about what is fair play. You know, taking this route, I take a time penalty. So in one sense, that's fair play. But then, of course, it's like, does everybody think that? Interestingly, in my situation, I did it after seeing other riders doing it, and in my edition of the race, it did actually cause a bit of a kerfuffle. Not me doing it, but these other riders, because they were at the pointy end. And I think also that's another interesting aspect, because when you are doing these races, there's definitely a difference between how people relate to it philosophically. So the idea of it being a race against yourself and what's acceptable to yourself.
Okay, so this is Anna just dropping in again to just fill in a little bit more about what Rob was saying. So the race directors and race officials deliberately don't publicise how we judge and deliver penalties for situations like what Rob just described. So because we do this deliberately, because we don't want people to make those kind of judgments and decisions like Rob made. You know, strictly speaking, he's not really done anything that's strictly speaking against the rules, but we want to discourage that kind of thinking, because it is a bit like looking for loopholes and ways to squeeze between the cracks of the rules. And obviously that's, as Mike says, that's what we try to discourage. So you know, because although you could be anywhere in the race, it doesn't really matter where you are in the race to some degree, because it's how your actions are perceived and how they make the people in front of you and behind you kind of react. You need to be considerate of them and, you know, think about their race and how they're going to feel about what you're doing. And are they going to feel like you're within rule 10 and the spirit of the race.
Right, so we can wrap the pod up here, I think, guys. It's absolutely kicking off here at the control point. Thanks so much for joining, Chris. It's been an absolute pleasure having you.
Oh, thank you.
What's in store for you over the next couple of days? How long are you here for?
We're going to be here until August the 1st. August the 1st is when this checkpoint officially closes. Yep. I'm going to do the close down. We've got our six volunteers all here at the moment. And it's going to be a lot of stamping of brevet cards and a great pleasure taken every time that we get to, because it's hard slog to get here. So yeah, we like it when we see riders.
Yeah, it's cool. But yeah, thanks so much for coming on board as a special guest.
Thank you.
Absolute pleasure. And thanks as always to Karen and Rob. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, Tom.
Thanks for having us.
And looking forward to chatting to you again tomorrow from somewhere else. Keep your eyes peeled on the race and look forward to chatting about what's been going on. We've got Bruno Ferraro here, Cap 159, at the control point. One last word from Bruno. Sign off.
Italy is nicer than Austria.
Amazing.
I'm sorry.
Cheers, guys. Yeah, we'll see you next time. And don't forget, you can send in any questions about the TCR for Rob and Karen to chat about in the upcoming episodes. It can be anything you like. No subject is too silly or complex for these two. Send those in to race@transcontinental.cc with pod question as the subject. And you'll also be able to ask questions on the Transcontinental Instagram stories. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating and a review, and we'll see you back here soon. This podcast is supported by our race partners, Apidura, Physique, Hutchinson, Kinesis, Komoot, LEM Helmets, and Pedaled. All the music has been created for this series by Joe Skinner.